night is no longer young. Hey, everybody, it's me again, aka Nick Way. This is the Proto Podcast, and it is, why not? I'm not going to date it. Nah, I will. It's the 1st of August, 2018, and I got a couple things to discuss. First and foremost, as those of you who probably follow me or seen me post here in the past day or so, I was talked into looking at a pre-screening of Dinesh D'Souza's Death of a Nation, one of his docudramas that he likes to do every election year to let you know that the Democrats are the most evil motherfuckers on the planet and their history and legacy is clear and that we gotta vote against them and rah, rah, rah. But I'll give you my full review when I get done discussing the news of the day, or at the very least, the things I want to kind of rant about. And I think first things first, the things I want to talk about here is some goings-ons and some happenings here in the land of enchantment, New Mexico. So I'm pulling this from the Associated Press. It's a couple days old, but it's pretty much going to formalize what's been going on here. Our boy, Governor, where the fuck is Aleppo Johnson, is thinking about running for Senate here in the state of New Mexico. To quote the AP, former Libertarian presidential candidate Gary Johnson is considering jumping into the race for the U.S. Senate in New Mexico, raising the profile of a race that Democrats seeking to capture the majority in Congress had seen as a safe seat. That seat is currently being occupied by Heinrich, is the senator from New Mexico, one of the two blue D's / liberals / terrible progressives that we have representing the state of New Mexico in the Senate. So the Johnson consultant by the name of Ron Nielsen, I'll explain about him in a minute, told the Associated Press on Friday that the former governor is strongly considering running if the Libertarian candidate, Aubrey Dunn, quits the race as expected. He is weighing it over right now, quotes Nielsen. He doesn't want to get into the race he can't win. Aubrey Dunn's son, Attorney General Blair Dunn, told AP that his father was dropping out of the race and would release more details on Monday. The Libertarian Party of New Mexico chair Chris Lucchini said it was his understanding that Dunn was quitting and that the new candidate would soon emerge. He declined to say if Johnson would be said candidate. If Johnson, 65, enters the race, he would go against Democrat incumbent Martin Heinrich and New Mexico Republican Mick Rich. I'm trying to say that like three times fast. Mick Rich in November. Democrats had felt Heinrich would have an easy path to re-election in the state that went to Hillary Clinton in 2016 in the urban areas. Rich, an Albuquerque contractor, is making his first run for elected office. Marge Elston, chair of the Democrat Party of New Mexico, dismissed the possibility of Johnson entering the race. While Gary Johnson has been off pursuing the national spotlight and his personal ambitions, Martin Heinrich has been on the front lines of fighting for New Mexicans. Johnson garnered 3% of the vote here, 3% of the vote nationally in the presidential race. He garnered a pretty substantial amount here in New Mexico, 9% of the vote. He held the state office of governor between 1995 and 2003. During the presidential campaign, Johnson vowed to cut military spending, raising eyebrows in his home state, which relies on three military bases to help offset its status as one of the poorest states in the nation. Not to mention the fact that we have a fuck ton of nuclear weapons here. I mean, I could go on and read the rest of the article, but it's pretty much been the scuttlebutt. So I basically went down and did my AFP pittance for the week and talked to some of the party heads and chairs, and it's pretty much a done deal that at the very least, Aubrey Dunn would drop out. He subsequently has, as of this taping, I guess recording of this podcast. A lot of that orchestrated behind the scenes by his son, who has proven to be not only a cunning backdoor, backroom politician, but a bit of a player. So Johnson still hasn't made a decision. You know, Ron Nielsen was his campaign consultant and his manager in the past. Rumor has it here in the state that he still owes the cat $2 million. The Senate run would generally just be for him to raise money and pay off Ron Nielsen. I believe that's 50% of what would probably happen here in the state, but I don't know, man. It leaves a lot to be desired. So tonight I met Mitch Rich at the pre-screening of Death of a Nation, and talking to a couple of the other guys who were there who had organized the event and had some time to talk offline with Mr. Rich, there was rumors that he was going to drop out to make way for Johnson. And I think he is kind of seeing what Johnson and Nielsen might be up to. And he's basically on no uncertain terms going to step down. Because the strategy was, if he were to drop out of the race, and Gary Johnson still, there's still a lot of love for Gary here in New Mexico, and Gary Johnson was to get in, that would assure Gary Johnson at least a plurality of the Republican vote, his already established Libertarian vote, which he was going to get wholeheartedly here. I mean, even I'm going to vote for the guy. And then, you know, that would be enough to challenge Heinrich. Now, I don't really think so. I honestly truly think that the blue urban areas really do throw off a lot of these races when it comes to national office. You notice that in Colorado. You'll notice that in Arizona. You'll notice that in even in Utah, right? These urban areas vote progressive. They always vote progressive. And it's history has proven that they typically always vote progressive. It's kind of a hard, hard nut to crack. Very few liberty-leaning or conservative-leaning or even Republican urban areas exist. Albuquerque, up until the last election, was one of the few, but the guy governed like a Democrat anyway. So to think that this was going to be pulled off is one thing or the other. And Mr. Rich has no fucking intention of dropping out. To be exact, I think, as my boy, you know, Burley Kane told me, he had choice words for the very notion that he would drop out of the race. So while some of us as libertarians were kind of excited that maybe, just maybe, we would get a big name in a race, even though he has, you know, he's kind of proven to be a joke over the years, but at the very least, it would maintain our major party status in the state. Now, that's still going to happen if he decides to come into the race. He's being very coy about it right now. Johnson has not definitively made a decision. He needs to definitively make a decision quick. This leads me to the thing that I told my other Libertarian Party fellows here in the state, where it's just like, if this was going to be a possibility, if Aubrey wasn't necessarily down for whatever, if Bob Walsh, which was a guy who was running for the governor's ticket, and you're going to recognize his name, Blair Dunn's mother as the you know, lieutenant governor, if that shit didn't come out of convention, no one should have ran. We wasted a lot of resources and a lot of time doing recounts for some last-minute write-in governor and lieutenant governor candidates so we could get on the, you can maintain major party status or at least have some semblance of running for the office, only to find out that they didn't make the count. No one got out in enough time. No one votes in primaries. This is just more of my frustration with the party. But actually, back to the Gary Johnson as a possibility. Gary Johnson is not going to win in the state of New Mexico. I've laid out why. One, his chief opponent that would get even right-leaning, liberty-minded votes isn't going to drop the fuck out. And he says, I'll be damned. He actually, he's professed this to people that I know who talked to him tonight at this pre-screening. A. B. The guy is a national joke. And that national joke transmits to what he's thought of here. He ain't been in office since 2003. And, you know, no offense to anyone there that slaves at the altar of Gary Johnson, and I'm probably one of them, he's not a serious candidate. He's just doing this, from what I suspect, and what people kind of told me offline, to pay off campaign debts that he owns this Ron Nielsen guy. Yeah, okay. That's another reason. Generally speaking, like, Mitch Rich is going to run hard at Gary. That's going to split the red vote, if you want to call it that, period. So Heinrich wins. Heinrich wins going away. Because if Mitch Rich is willing to go to war with Gary Johnson, because Gary Johnson is just kind of stepping into the race last minute, this shit should have been figured out at convention. It wasn't figured out at convention. The people who we sat at convention with, who were running for these offices, who run these nominations, so to speak, and I use air quotes for that, are not fucking serious candidates. And it's quite obvious that they're not serious candidates. I've had candidate forums with most of them. We have, at most of all the people who came out of convention, three guys. Three. It's baffling to me. And this Gary Johnson thing is just, it's just a money grab, man. Just a money grab. And I think, as a distance strategy to maintain major party status by getting like a senatorial candidate on the ballot in the state is going to get more than 3% of the vote. He'll get more than 3% of the vote here. But that love for Gary Johnson that was here in 2003 and in 2008 and to even a lesser extent 2016 ain't there now. We're much more tribal. We're much more polarized now. Him coming in and saying anything bad about Trump, he's going to lose red. He's going to lose the red districts in this state. Him trying to come in and like kowtow to the social justice left, it's going to get him savaged by the red people who weren't going to vote for him in the first place, but now especially aren't going to vote for him. And libertarians are just kind of stuck in the middle. There's really, if you had to give us a number here in this state, there's about 10,000 of us. 6,000 of us are registered. Yeah, that's not enough. You'd be lucky if he could muster 9, like he did before. But we'll have to see. So, you know, that's just the goings on here in the state. And it is what it is, so to speak. Next story. 3D guns. 3D printed guns. So apparently some attorney general in New Jersey sent a threatening letter to Defense Distributed. I think last week, according to his recent story, basically saying like, hey man, don't publish these files on August 1st, which is today as I record. And basically that injunction withheld, right? And then you have this update here where like the Defense Distributed was informed by the state of Pennsylvania now that it is seeking a temporary restraining order in federal court to stop it from distributing weapon-making files in the state. Listen to this. Defense Distributed agreed, at least through next week, voluntarily to block Pennsylvania IP addresses? So this injunction was put in place. He was going to publish these plans today. He cannot because of this injunction in this one federal court in New Jersey. And this other municipality is going to say, oh, you have to block all Pennsylvania IP addresses. Because, you know, we don't want your 3D guns. This is some asinine bullshit. And to add fucking insult to injury, you have Congress people, senators, getting up there talking about legislation to stop 3D printing of weapons and plastic guns and shit like that. First things first, plastic weapons, as projectile weapons are against the law to manufacture. And two, I mean, what the fuck? See, this is the thing. This is where I think like Cody Wilson kind of got this right, because it's a double-edged sword, because it's a First Amendment right infringing on a Second Amendment right. So they're infringing on a First Amendment right because they ultimately want to infringe on a Second Amendment right. He's tied up two rights in this one loss, in these lawsuits that are being filed, right? Because the previous lawsuit was settled with the State Department and the Department of Justice and stuff like that, which led us down this road to him saying, all right, on the 1st of August, we're going to distribute these files. And now you have people going to federal courts, the tyranny of the people in black, to stop him from exercising the First Amendment right, and hence, and by hence infringing on the Second Amendment right. I mean, you can't make this shit up. This is the fucking tyranny we live in. And lo and behold, here comes the fucking NRA saying, hey, man, we oppose plastic guns and shit. We do it. Again, acquiescing. Falling on the sword. Sucking the dick of the state. This is why I can't fucking stand the NRA, man. I know, man, they got some good personalities over there. You know, they have Colin Noor and, you know, Dana Lash with her sexy ass. You got Dan Bongino. These guys are just, you know, they're patriots, they're champions for the Second Amendment and calling out liberal nonsense. But they support they work for an organization that is at every turn acquiesced to every infringement to the Second Amendment. That has to cease. Not another inch. If you want to support a pro-Second Amendment, this is fuck the amendment, pro-gun organization, go to Owners of America, United States Concealed Carry Association. There are other groups out there that are much more militant. And I think it's time to get militant. Because the left gets militant. They're willing to infringe on the First Amendment to stop people from distributing a file that allows them to exercise the Second. This is tyranny. And it almost makes me want to go full fucking ANCAP and like involuntarist and be like, fuck this shit. It's sickening. Fucking sickening. Blocking fucking IP addresses and stuff. Like no one's going to use a motherfucking VPN. I mean, it's like this. If I'm really hot up to get the files to print out the pieces for a plastic gun to go and kill some goddamn body, but a law saying that it's against the law is going to stop me, A. The IP, me living in Philadelphia, not being able to get access to it because my IP address. Yep. If I'm a motivated enough murderous maniac, fuck the rules that infringe on the Second Amendment. I am going to print the weapon and I'm going to murder somebody. Laws don't stop bad things from happening. And I think people don't understand that. And I tell leftists and people who are curious, or almost I like to call fascist curious about infringing on the Second Amendment. It's like in calling the NRA a terrorist organization complicit in murder. You better be goddamn careful how you characterize the NRA. Because as Dave Smith says, a motherfucking comedian, I might add, but someone who's always on point when it comes to these things, you do realize the NRA is the moderate wing of the Second Amendment movement. You know, there are many, many more radicals out there that are anywhere from, you know, fuck the Constitution to privatize nukes. Yep. You might want to use the NRA as your friend to slowly infringe, because you're going to force a reaction of people who are going to be like, you know what? I'll buy this ghost gunner fucking printer. They're going after Austin Peterson because he's selling these ghost gun print, this ghost printer gun, this ghost gun printer guns and stuff. He's being banned from Twitter as he slowly moves into his primary, which he's probably going to lose. And that would be the last Liberty candidate to fall in these primaries in MAGAism. MAGAism is far and wide. MAGAism, as defined as Make America Greatism, it is not like it is a little bit of Jangoistic Reaganism with a pinch of conservatism and all about owning the libs. Personally, I don't want to own the libs. They seem to be a little bit high maintenance. I would probably want to rent the libs. I'm here to own the cons on this one. And conservatives that sit back and like, yeah, to think we gotta defend the NRA and throw any money toward the NRA, you're fucking idiots. You're idiots. They're going to sell you up the river again. They're going to infringe on your rights again. And thank God for Cody Wilson And, you know, big up and thank God for Mike Lee, who saw this fucking bill coming onto the Senate floor, looked at the preamble to the fucking bill and said, I mean, Mike Lee's a very conservative Mormon, but let me channel his inner anarchist. What the fuck is this shit about not shall allow to be published or shall prohibit publishing of? The minute you get into that fucking language, that's fucking tyranny. Shit. Lysander Spooner had it right, man. I mean, either the Constitution has been powerless to stop the government we have, or it is unfucking fit to exist. And they're just shitting on it. It's crazy. Alright, speaking of MAGAism, so tonight I did go to this, what is it here? The Death of a Nation pre-screening. It's Dinesh D'Souza's latest right-wing porn, to quote Richard Dreyer from the American Conservative. And, oh my god, it was so over the top. Oh, it was jingoistic. It was rah-rah. It was Trumpism turned up to 1,000. Oh, the best part of the whole damn thing was like the first half where he kind of takes clips from all these people saying that Trump wouldn't win. And then he kind of moved it into like, well, Trump won't win it won't get out of the primaries. Well, Trump won't win the election. And then it has all the election night coverage sliced together and stuff like that. And all the people freaking the fuck out and acting crazy. And then after he get elected, all the motherfuckers acting the fool because he got elected. That was the best part of the movie. That was like the first 15 minutes of it. I will relive those moments until the day I die. Because I think, while he wasn't my guy and I didn't vote for him, I voted for Garrett Johnson, but please don't hold that against me. There's nothing more joyous than sitting back and seeing Pennsylvania call for Trump and knowing that that was the magic number, and the fact that the precincts didn't report it for Michigan and Wisconsin and Ohio. And, well, Ohio came in pretty early. I was just like, that son of a bitch pulled it off. It was probably one of the greatest nights because of the overreaction. There's nothing more I like than, at the very least, sipping on the tears of progressives and liberals and leftists and whoever else thought that he wasn't going to win. Even me, man. I cried a little bit for my country, but then those were tears of joy, i.e. out of the sheer laughter and the enjoyment I got from watching. And it's cool to see that montage over and over again. And because it goes to show you that when a political movement takes a hold and the establishment is against you, you can pull the impossible off. And there was no way in hell. I mean, one, the motherfucker shouldn't deserve to win because I don't think he's a buffoon, but I think he's a little brash. And I think the Republicans in the primary were a little bit too hands off early. They tried to play with fire and they all ended up getting, you know, second, third degree burns, if not death. And they should have went at him often and early, and they didn't. The only person who really got off on him and really took a chunk out of him was Carly Fiorina. That's only because she played the pussy card. So that part of the movie was great. The rest of it is really conjecture. Right. I mean, we all know that, like, the modern eugenics movement was definitely inspiration for the atrocities of the Nazis. We know fascists, by their very nature, are of the left. The fact that they somehow appear on the right now is kind of a quirk of history. And really, it's revisionism with a little bit of just migration over time, because nationalism is predominantly now thought of in a contemporary standpoint as being of the right. And so when you see nationalism in its most extreme forms, and then you see that nationalism take its inevitable turn when you actually infuse ethno-nationalism into it, you get the murderous regime of, you know, good old-fashioned Adolf Hitler. And, you know, that vein has been mined. We know that exists. There's no direct correlation to the Democrat Party, but the Democrat Party was the party of slavery. We understand that. The Republican Party was the party of not expanding slavery. They weren't the actual, they were radicals within the Republican Party that were all about abolition of slavery. I mean, that's just, they just, that was simply their primary goal. And they were like, fuck the Democrats. Those motherfuckers are the guys that took over after Reconstruction that inflicted the most brutal of occupational, like, constraints. I mean, you think the Palestinian-Israeli thing is lopsided? So, Reconstruction was terrible time. It's what gave rise to the KKK. And they pretty much the resurgence of the Democrat Party. The first, black senators and House of Representatives members came from the South after Reconstruction was done and the damage had been done from the radicals of the right, radicals of the, abolitionists. Yeah, the resurgence of the KKK happened. You didn't see a black congressman or congresswoman or senator for about 100 years. So, there's no love lost there for Lincoln. I understand that Lincoln had his faults, i.e., he burnt the South to the ground. But I've already told you guys, I don't give a shit about that. I have selfish reasons for at least having some kind words to say about Lincoln in the interim. But, and then it gets all Jingoistic, and it's like Trump's the only person that can save us from this second civil war that's going to happen. It just gets people jammed up. And, when I saw, Hillary's America, back then, it was good. It was red meat for me. I hadn't done my full conversion, but, I still think Dinesh D'Souza is a bit of an ally. I think there's revisionism that happens. I think we can definitely discuss the evolution of how the political polarization flipped, that, things that were considered left-wing and fairly laissez-faire and anti-war ended up being, libertarian principles or leftist or right-wing principles and vice versa. I'm reading Rothbard's The Betrayal of the American Right, and I mean, though it comes from a very anti-war perspective and pacifist perspective, it does break down really honestly truly how the old right were your liberal classical liberal laissez-faire anti-war types. And that conversion happened over time through academia and media and just really what he ignores in the book is like the outward threat of communism. And you see this from this movie. They just feel that like this outward threat of leftism the true fascism and stuff like that. And this is true. There is left-wing fascism. I mean, it's enforced, right? Well, it was enforced by political correctness and culturally. Now it's being enforced through, in some instances, violence, but to rules, regulations, and laws. And this is a global phenomena. It's why you have reactionary movements like Antifa or the alt-right or, white nationalists across Europe, right? All this liberal New World Order stuff, neoliberal New World Order stuff. Not to sound conspiratorial, but you have to understand it. Is what leads to these reactionary movements. He did an interview with Richard Spencer where he actually made Richard Spencer out to be who the fuck he really is. It's just left-wing fascist. He's just a left-wing identitarian socialist. Not necessarily a fascist, but definitely a socialist. I mean, the things Richard Spencer espouses are, in the contemporary parlance, leftists. He just takes it from a identitarian and a racial perspective. And, I kind of whispered to the guy next to me, said, yeah, this guy voted for Ron. This guy was on Ron Paul's team. And we need to have a very frank discussion on the libertarian side of things, or the liberty side of things, that we lose a lot of people like that who radicalize. We were just having this very long discussion in the Facebook group, the Make Liberty Great Again Facebook group, about what's the guy's name? Christopher Chase Rachels, and how much of a douchebag he is. and how he went from this guy who wrote Spontaneous Order, which was this great, great, great thesis, this great, the words lose me, it's getting late, but just this brilliant book about anarchism and voluntarism. And then he went on the right, like, you know, right, white, and libertarian, and is, you know, dudes hanging from helicopters in silhouette from his book cover, and he's harassing, you know, single mothers and divorcees about being terrible human beings and stuff like that. And now he lost his job and he's doing a GoFundMe, and then they pulled the GoFundMe because, you know, he's kind of a shithead and a douchebag. And, you know, but this guy went from being this, at the very least, articulated, like, true voluntarism, right? Same thing with, like, Christopher Cantwell. These guys were just rabid defenders of anarchism and, like, libertarianism. And then, like, they fell off the deep end. We need to fucking start figuring out why. And why is the synopsis of the death of a nation is, you know, yeah, Trump's going to save us from these new fascists that are Democrats, right? And he puts a name and a face to it. But the overall, like, global thesis of his entire movie, if I were to kind of boil it down and take it out of the MAGA universe, is leftism, progressivism in its most militant forms becomes almost fascistic in its implementation culturally, and that inevitably you do get reactionary movements because of them. And we've lost people on the at least libertarian side, big L, big tent libertarian, thick libertarian side, to neoconservatism, to Trump derangement, never Trumpism, and to the alt-right, and to outright just fucking racists and socialists. We've lost them. And we've lost them because of identity and fear and all these things that contribute to the breakdown of a society. And ultimately, you know, the premise of the entire movie is, like, there's this new civil war coming and Trump will be the new Lincoln. And that's some dick sucking worship right there. I'm not getting down with, but back away from that and remove the names out of it. Yeah. Yeah. That's how empires fall apart. You know, and make no mistake, we are an empire. I'm one of the few people who is, you know, a libertarian that is willing to, I don't necessarily accept it. I don't even like it, but I just see it as a reality of things. And we're falling apart monetarily, fiscally, militarily, and culturally. The thing that we always like to ignore. If you don't heed the warnings of militarism and social justice, so to speak, right? But militarism on the left, from the left, who's been saying it forever, and corporatism. And if you don't heed the warnings about culture and identity from the right, which is mainly where it sits, and that identity doesn't have to be racial, it could be national. But if you ignore these things, and if you don't have the yin and the yang, if you don't have Jerusalem and Athens, I think Dinesh D'Souza's very, Jingoistic, rah-rah, kind of, you know, right-wing MAGA porn is kind of right in its own kind of cynical, kind of sick way. And then, of course, you know, he ends every one of his, you know, documentaries with singing and beautiful pictures of America and shit like that. And, you know, and everybody's fucking standing up and clapping. And, you know, I just walked out because it's just like, I got a long drive home. It's raining like a motherfucker here because it's monsoon season. And I got to get this shit off my chest. I got to get this podcast cleaned up for consumption later and stuff like that. But that, you know, that's my rambling roundabout way of giving you kind of a short review on things that are going on with MAGA land. So on a positive note, after I've been ranting for about 35 minutes here, So the other day, and I think it's still sitting there too, even though there was, I guess, a bit of a pullback. Apple and Amazon's market caps are 990-ish and 875-ish billion dollars respectively. I know it's a bubble, but just think of it. Two American companies started by men, just single individuals, just individuals in a free country, they are going to approach $1 trillion. Now, it took Apple about 40 years. It's going to take Amazon like 20, less than 20, to be have market capitalizations of $1 trillion. The only companies on earth that have achieved that status are government entities like Saudi Aramco or China Oil and Bank of this nation or National Oil Company of X. But those are government entities. These are companies started in a country, in a country of immigrants and mutts. Where Jeff Bezos was living in his parents' basement and shit, and Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak were just kind of grifters and slackers and shit. And what they built has changed the world. Google is or Alphabet is not terribly far behind. I think great American companies have changed the world. And it's kind of disappointing that, Google is going to acquiesce, be evil to get into China. But it's better for them to kind of get into China with some censorship than to not get into China at all. But think of these companies, man. Started by immigrants, started by Americans, started by, children of immigrants. I mean, I hate Silicon Valley for what it's become in the last 5 years. But let's back out for a second and let's just marvel at the fact that two American companies built by Americans had not only changed the fucking world, but they will achieve, in a bubble, I might add, they will achieve $1 trillion in market capitalization, which probably represents trillions of dollars of captured value. So, I know we get down on America a lot. I know I just came back from consuming some MAGA porn, right-wing porn that, I shouldn't be subject to because I'm now this enlightened libertarian. But, and I know this is a bubble that's going to correct itself in one way, shape, or form when it comes to these equity markets and stuff like that. But let's take all that out of the equation for a second, and let's understand that these companies have been were cre built and created in my lifetime, and they have created so much wealth, prosperity, productivity. They've created fortunes upon fortunes upon fortunes, and the market, though in its irrational, bubbly exuberance, has awarded these companies. Because there will be trillion-dollar American companies. No American companies that were built by Americans have achieved this. That I think ever. I think even if you adjust for inflation, and Jeff Bezos is worth $150 billion. I saw something in the Atlantic where it's just like, there's something to matter if a guy can accumulate that much. Yeah, maybe there is. But I'm not that type of guy that's going to sit there and play a hate and say that he doesn't deserve that. There's this picture I post from time to time of Jeff Bezos sitting in his office with his hand-painted fucking Amazon.com sign. And it's just him. Him and probably some servers and like a couple other dudes. In 1995 and 6, man. 97. And now that man is worth $150 billion fucking dollars. So maybe it's a little bit of the death of America wearing off on me, man. But God fucking bless America. Because there's no other fucking place on the planet where that'll happen. Not for a very, very long time. All right, then.